The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, the Peabody Award-winning program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today we present the third in a series of four conversations with distinguished leaders of modern thought. Our guest is the Honorable Herbert H. Lehman, former United States Senator and Governor of the state of New York. He will be interviewed by NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman.
Herbert H. Lehman's contribution to the American scene become more impressive each time they are reviewed. His career has covered 60 years of public activity. It has spanned such diverse areas as business, state affairs, national concerns, international problems, and philanthropy. His political career has been highlighted by four terms as governor of New York State, two terms as United States Senator. In addition, he served as Director General of what has been called the world's largest humanitarian operation, UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration. His biographer, Alan Nevins, has described Herbert Lehman as a fighter for liberal ideals. Governor, what is your conception of liberalism?
Well, as I view the situation, I would define liberalism as love of freedom and equality, concern for the underprivileged, a deep passion for justice, and a belief in universal brotherhood. And liberals must wage a never-ending fight for the realization of these fundamental goals.
Governor Lehman, it would seem that you truly are your father's son. He was a fighter for liberal ideals, too. As a matter of fact, your father was chosen by Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, for a humanitarian mission during the Civil War. That mission was to obtain relief supplies for Confederate soldiers in prison camps. Now, why was he chosen for that mission?
Well, it's pretty hard to say just why he was chosen. But my father immigrated to this country in 1848. His two brothers had come a few years prior to that date. He was a very highly respected citizen of Montgomery, Alabama, an intimate friend of the governor of Alabama, Governor Watts, and an acquaintance of Jefferson Davis. I don't think my father ever was an intimate friend of Jefferson Davis, but he was an acquaintance. During the war, of course, a lot of Confederate soldiers were made prisoners of war, just as Union soldiers were made prisoners by the Confederates. They had very little food, very few of the amenities of life. Alabama and the Confederacy then decided to try to buy additional relief supplies to send in to their soldiers, which were held in prison camps in the North. The only way they could finance this was through cotton, which was their only real barter item. So they set aside a considerable quantity of cotton with the idea of selling it to the mills in the North, which needed cotton very much, of course, textile mills. My father was chosen, together with a Protestant minister, whose name escapes me at the moment, to go to the North, go to General Grant's headquarters, just before the end of the war. And he asked permission to pass through the lines and take this cotton with him for sale in the North. General Grant, undoubtedly for military reasons, refused that permission, so that the mission became abortive, and the cotton was returned to the South. My father always had great affection for Alabama. Quite certain that if he was alive today, he would not have that affection. I'm quite certain that he would be ashamed of what his former adopted state was doing. But at that time, he and my mother were loyal Confederates with a great affection for the South and their neighbors. He visited Alabama frequently after the war, even when he was living here in New York.
Governor Lehman, your family came to New York shortly after the Civil War, and you were born and raised in New York City. And then you went on to Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Now, you did that in spite of the fact that your older brother Irving, to whom you were devoted, went to Columbia College, and the fact that your father wanted you to attend Columbia. How did that come about?
Well, it's rather an amusing story, I think. My father had four sons. And he made up his mind he would like the two older sons to go into business with him in New York. He wanted his third son to become a lawyer. My brother Irving not only became a lawyer, but of course became the head of the judiciary system, department of the state, serving for many years as chief judge of the Court of Appeals. Then he wanted his younger son to become an engineer. I was the younger son, and I can honestly say that I don't believe I've ever known a man who has less mechanical or scientific understanding. I can't drive a nail straight, much less build a bridge or a road or a great building. But I didn't argue with my father very much. We didn't in those days, although my father was a very kindly man. And I said, all right, if that's what you want, I'm going to do it. I didn't have any particular preferences either. So I took my examinations for the School of Mines at Columbia. And by some miracle which nobody has unraveled, I passed my examinations. So I was headed for Columbia School of Mines in the profession of engineering. Well, I had a teacher of history, Frank Irwin, was a very good friend of mine. I was devoted to him, and I think he liked me. And he made up his mind he was going to intervene. So he went to my father, and he said, Mr. Lehman, this is none of my business, but I can warn you that if you insist on your son Herbert becoming an engineer, you will probably spoil what may be a good businessman, or may be good in some other profession, and make a simply rotten engineer out of it. So my father, being wise, said, well, what would you do? And Mr. Irwin said, well, I would send him to a small college, preferably my own, which is Williams. That's how I went to Williams, and I never regretted it.
Well, at Williams, you tried your hand, I believe, at sports and at dramatics. How well did you do?
I was a very lonely boy the first year I went to Williams. I was the first boy of my faith who had come to Williams in 50 years. The boys had known of Jews, but I don't think many of them had met them, because a large percentage of them lived on farms and in small communities. And I was a very homesick boy. And an incident happened at the end of my freshman year. I was on the squad of the track team. The captain of the team was Harry Patterson, who later became a well-known surgeon down here in New York. One afternoon when I had been trotting around the track for what seemed to me endless miles, I was getting dressed in the locker room, and Patterson came by and he hit me on the back and he said, freshman, you're not going to make the team this year, but I admire your spirit. Well, if you had given me $1 million, it wouldn't have meant as much to me as that word of encouragement. And I think it was the turning point in my whole college career. And I've told the story many times because I think we older people should remember that, give encouragement more frequently than we do.
Governor, after Williams, you started your business career in New York, but you also found time to do volunteer social work at the Henry Street Settlement.
Yes, I first went into the textile business. My salary was $5 a week, and which seemed an awful lot to me. And when I got my first $5 bill, a nice crisp bill, I made up my mind that this was worthy of being memorialized, and I wanted to have it framed so as to always have it and show it to my family. $5 were a double of a lot of money to tie up. So I had the bill changed from $5 to 2 2s and a 1, and I had one of the $2 bills framed. But then I became very much interested almost immediately on graduation from college in the Henry Street Settlement. I had met Lillian D. Wald in about 1897 through Jacob H. Schiff, who was a great citizen of the city, great philanthropist, and one of the leading businessmen. I helped her a little bit, and many of my friends of my own age, did some work, club work, down at Henry Street Settlement. She herself, Miss Wald, came to New York from Rochester for the purpose of doing nursing, and she became the head of the visiting nurse service of New York. Well, I took a club, the second club that had been organized at the Henry Street settlement. It was called the Patriots. I suppose there were about 15 or 16 boys in it, all of about 13 or 14 years old. And we met at least once a week, often more frequently. We'd meet in the settlement house, and then afterwards we'd go over to the corner drugstore and have an ice cream soda. And I got to be very, very well acquainted with these boys. I kept the club for about 5 or 6 years. By that time, they were old enough, of course, not to need a leader. I tried to teach them my concept, tell them about my concept of democracy. I tell them that what I thought it took to be a good citizen and an active citizen in community affairs. I remember once I told them about democracy and about the blessing we had in this country of being able to vote for whomever we wanted without any limitation whatsoever. And that we were also fortunate in having a secret ballot. That impressed them. And then we proceeded to have our election. It was a secret election. Each boy had a little piece of paper on which he was to write the name of his choice for president of the club. And I opened the results. I found that there were 13 boys, and each boy had voted for himself. But it was a great little club. I remained very friendly with the Henry Street Settlement.
To this day, Governor Lehman, we know that the Henry Street Settlement remains close to your heart. You're one of its directors. And one of your contributions to the settlement has a very personal meaning for you, I know.
Well, that's what is called Pete's House. That is a building which we erected in memory of my oldest son, who was a fighter pilot. In the last one didn't come back. And it's been most useful to the community. The boys and girls use it every hour of the day and late into the evening. It's a meeting place for them.
There's another manifestation of your great interest in children, Governor Lehman. That's your recent contribution to the Children of New York, and I think it's fair to say to their parents also. That's the Children's Zoo in Central Park. What inspired that gift?
Mr. Lehman and I were approaching our 50th anniversary, and we wanted to show in some tangible way our great gratitude to the blessings which we've had. Mrs. Lehman and I have always loved zoos. We remember going up to the Bronx Zoo when our children were very young, and then later when our grandchildren were young. But I consulted two men, particularly, about what form our gift should take. One was Bob Moses, and the other one is Jim Felt, who was long chairman of the Planning Commission. They advised building a zoo, which suited us very well indeed. Mrs. Lehman gave a great part of her time for months and months to watch the work and to help in any way she could. She was particularly active and useful in the decoration of the buildings and the design of the buildings. The zoo was dedicated on September 28, 1961. The attendance has been far greater than we had anticipated. And judging by the countless letters which we get from children and adults alike, I feel very confident that the zoo is bringing enjoyment to many children.
I'm sure you are justified in your confidence. Governor Lehman, your philanthropic interests reflect your concern not only for the material well-being of people, but for what might be called the spiritual ideals of liberalism. As a matter of fact, it's been calculated that you belong to and contribute to about 300 organizations, many of them religious institutions, and one of them the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Can you tell us something about your interest in the seminary?
I think this figure of 300, I'm not responsible for that.
I think you are responsible.
Well, I meant it was calculation of the number, the count, rather, was made by a secretary of mine who was with me for about 30 years, died 6 or 7 years ago. Certainly the number, however, since then has not decreased. One of those interests is the Jewish seminary. I've taken a great deal of interest in that for many years. It's rather peculiar, too, that I should, because I'm of the reform group of Judaism. The seminary is of the conservative group. There is, of course, a third one, the Orthodox. All I wanted to know was that a man was Jewish in his outlook. When I say Jewish in his outlook, had the same deep faith that I think men should have, men of all faiths, not only Jewish, and led a reasonably decent life. I'm not deeply interested in ritual or in form. My interest is in the degree of faith that is behind those who practice religion.
Well, the Institute of Talmudic Ethics was named after you at the seminary. Is there a particular reason for it having been named?
Well, the only reason that I can see is that I've long been a director. I'm chairman of the Board of Overseers, and some of the faculty and trustees felt that they would like to honor me by calling this school after me, and it has been called after me. I think my interest in the seminary comes largely from the faith that I acquired early in life, faith in the fundamental ideals and traditions of Judaism, love and respect for one God who is the God of everyone.
Your concern, Governor Lehman, for the entire human family was certainly reflected in your activities as Director General of UNRWA. UNRWA is said to have alleviated more suffering and more misery than any human institution ever did before. In spite of that, you've said that that was the only task you ever took up, that you left with a sense that it was unfinished. Why was that?
First of all, I want to say that of all the responsibilities and tasks which I've been privileged to take on, none has ever given me anywhere near the satisfaction of soul satisfaction that UNRWA did. It was by all means the greatest relief and rehabilitation organization in the entire history of the world. We spent nearly $4 billion. The reason it gave me such great satisfaction is because I could see the results of the work we were doing. We knew from personal experience in the field that we had saved and were saving millions of lives, millions of people, from starvation, cold, from lack of shelter, clothing, security, and hope. When I made that statement that it was unfinished, what I meant was that it was my opinion that the work should have been continued for at least 1 and possibly 2 years more. But the work of UNRWA was not unfinished because after a year or so, it was continued under the Marshall Plan, the Point 4 Plan, UNESCO, International Refugee Organization, the Foreign Aid Program, and other similar organizations. Even the United Nations carried on the work of UNRWA, and so far as the structure of the United Nations is concerned, it's almost identical with that of UNRWA. And we had about the same difficulties in conducting UNRWA as the United Nations now has in its relationships with other countries. The vote was very nearly the same at that time as it is now.
On the political side, sir, you have had your share of winning and losing battles and good causes. If you were to look back now, which victories would you pick out as the most important during your terms in the Senate?
Well, Mr. Newman, my career was not based so much on victory as on preserving the principles and the purposes which were involved. For instance, in the McCarthy struggle, I was not the only one who beat him. I was, of course, one of the first and possibly the most aggressive. But there were many other men who were deeply interested and active in the fight against McCarthy. It was a pity that when he finally was censured, it was not so much on the ground of principle as on the ground of his having affronted the Senate. And I felt that to that extent we did not gain the victory which I had hoped for.
You also fought against the McCarran Act, I believe?
Yes, I fought against it even before I became governor. And I think McCarran was the most arrogant man that we had in the Senate during the years I served there, nearly 8 years. It's been a perfectly useless bill, and nonetheless gave at that time and still gives the power to abuse the privileges and the rights of many people. I also fought for the civil rights and liberties continuously. There, too, I carried on that fight long before I went down to Washington while I was governor. And we did get through a number of bills which were of importance. And finally, I fought for the passage of social legislation. You know, in the state of New York, and I feel very proud of this, in 1935, the only year, by the way, the Democrats had control of both houses of the legislature. And we had control of it by just one vote, a majority of one. We passed more labor and social legislation of value than had ever been passed before in the state. In fact, George Meany, the head of the AFL-CIO, characterized that session as having passed more and better legislation, labor and social legislation, than had ever been passed by any state in the Union.
Governor, we've mentioned Alan Nevins, the historian, Pulitzer Prize winner, who recently wrote a biography of you called Herbert H. Lehman and His Era. In talking about your work as a senator, he notes your commitment to principle and its effect on your work in the Senate. He says that despite your experience in practical politics, you found it difficult to compromise when you were in the Senate. Now, would you perhaps have been able to accomplish more if you had been more ready to compromise?
Well, Mr. He's perfectly right in mentioning that and raising the question. It's a question which I myself have raised about myself many times. Newman, I don't know. It's quite possible that if I had been willing to compromise more freely, and I did compromise occasionally, but not on principle, I would have gotten more bills through. Now, I'm quite certain that if I was confronted with the same decision now as I was at that time, I would take exactly the same position.
Our next guest in this series, Governor, is Sergeant Shriver, the director of the Peace Corps, and he has a great many young people working for him. This leads me to ask you, Governor Lehman, whether you feel the state of the world today encourages greater social idealism in young people than the world of your youth presented to you.
I think it does. For this reason, I think that the young people are far better educated than we were. They have education advantages that we didn't have through the development of mass media, the radio and television, the growth of the newspapers. I think many more of them have a desire to go into some kind of work that is going to be of benefit to the world. Today, of course, with the difficulty of the uncertainty of what he's going to do after he leaves college, with the certainty that we're going to live in the Cold War for at least a very protracted period, and he doesn't know what's going to happen to him. It's very natural he should be confused, but he is confused, and we want. And another thing I think I'm justified in being a little critical is that I think they put too much emphasis on conformity, and that's particularly true with the very young, the adolescents, who just hate to do anything that the boys and girls around them don't do. And I hope they're going to outgrow that as they get older. But at the present time, there's a great unreasonable amount of conformity, in my opinion, among the young people. I think there's too much conformity in business life, too. This emphasis on conformity has taken away a lot of the imagination and the independence of thought, both among the very young people and among young people who go into business.
How do you find the state of the world today, Governor? What do you think are the greatest dangers we face, and are you optimistic about our ability to face them?
Well, I find the state of the world today very depressing, very frightening. I think we're going to be able to triumph over our difficulties. I think we're going to be able to sustain our democratic liberal ideas, liberal actions. But I'm not minimizing the difficulty of doing so. And I do question whether we're going to be able to. I think, of course, the great problem is the problem of survival. We come frighteningly near the brink of war a number of times during the past 10 years. As I view the world, what's happening in it, I think we sometimes, even today, are frighteningly near it. We've avoided it. I hope to God we're going to. But you just can't shrug it off. I think the only thing we can do is to keep ourselves strong militarily. We have to do that. I think we must continue our efforts and insist on keeping the door open in every way we possibly can to peace and to a modus vivendi which will permit us to exist side by side with the countries that have different concepts, different views, and certainly different ambitions from what we have.
Thank you very much, Governor Lehman. It's been a great pleasure and a great honor to speak with you.
Our Eternal Light program today was the third in a series of 4 conversations with distinguished leaders of modern thought. Our guest was the Honorable Herbert H. Lehman, former United States Senator and Governor of the State of New York. He was interviewed by NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman. Editorial consultant for this program was Robert Allison. We invite you to join us next week when our guest will be the Director of the Peace Corps, Sergeant Shriver. If you would like a copy of today's program, please send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This is Vic Robey. This weekly Peabody Award-winning program is produced under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This pre-recorded program has been an NBC Public Affairs presentation.
The President of the UN General Assembly, Zafrullah Khan, will meet the press today on NBC Radio.